Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long in studio. We'll be joined by Steve Geller at 5:45 for our triple option feature. I want to tell everybody at 4:20, a little bit afterwards, we'll be joined by the Deputy Athletic Director, COO of Colorado State, Scott Sidwell. Formerly, Scott's worked with the Saints and now the Deputy AD with Colorado State. But Scott was at the premiere of the new Manning-produced film on Buddy Tevens, former Tulane head coach, and Buddy was the counselor at Manning Passing Academy all those years. Tragically passed away last year due to injuries suffered while he was riding, him and his wife were riding on a bike, and he got hit by a car and passed away last year. And so they did a film on Buddy, The Buddy Way, and it premieres on ESPN2 tomorrow night, Wednesday the 29th at 5 p.m. It'll be the first time it gets shown on ESPN, but Scott went to the premiere of it last week, so we'll have Scott on, talk to us about memories with Buddy Tevens, just a great guy. He was, you know, so many years here at Tulane with the Green Wave and then at Dartmouth, but every year him and I would sit down and we'd talk at the Manning Passing Academy, just a great guy, and just tragic that his life got taken away, prime years of his life. And he was really a super guy. And so we'll get his take on The Buddy Way, which, again, will play on ESPN tomorrow starting at 5 p.m. They'll have a bunch of different times with the movie The Buddy Way. At 4:40, Jeff Nowak, who's Saints sideline reporter, also a digital content producer for sports. He is in Mobile for the Senior Bowl. Got to see some of it this morning and watching some of the practices, and Jeff got to watch it too. We were kind of going back and forth about players that I was watching on television, he was watching out in person. And at 5:20, Mark Schlereff will join us, our Odyssey NFL insider, to talk about Super Bowl Sunday. Also about the Saints coaching search. And today, Mike Kafka did an interview at the Senior Bowl talking about his interview with the Saints and how things went there. And nothing specific yet on far as interviews are concerned with the Saints and when it'll be set up for Mike McCarthy. Last night, they did the interview with Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles. And it looks as though McCarthy's interview will be coming pretty soon. So I think they're down the home stretch with this. Basically, they've done their interviews. Only thing left is Mike McCarthy. We'll see how that breaks out. And I'm sure with Mike, part of it is want to know a little bit about what type of control I'll have, because he had zero control. Zero. With the Cowboys. You That's all run by Jerry.
Brian Schottenheimer ended up being their head coaching option. Is because Jerry Jones retains all the control he wants.
And it'll be that way, Charlie, to the day he closed them eyes for good.
And then he'll wonder why he never won a Super Bowl in his aging years. I'm just going to be honest with you.
Charlie, I had this conversation, radio station out of Dallas this morning, and one of the things, man, I think about of what could have been, and you saw, you know, he was the money guy, and he changed the way ownership does business in the NFL more than any guy ever in the National Football League, Jerry Jones. But when he thought he could also become the player personnel director, the guy that's making all the calls when Jimmy Johnson was doing that. And he had won back-to-back Super Bowls. And Jerry makes that famous comment, I could hire 100 coaches that could have won here. What? Come on.
It's the ego of some of these guys, Mike.
And again, that's still there, that he believes in that. And he has hired, other than Bill Parcells, I think he was the controlling guy with everyone. I thought he gave Bill a little bit of leeway more than he would give someone else. But that was the only way Parcells was going to go there. Was that you give up. But then Bill got tired of it. It was constant over and over and over again. McCarthy did have success there. Man, when you win 12 games three straight years in a row, now, no playoff success, but to win 12 games three straight years, man, that's hard to do in this league. But Jerry's deal is, I want to win a Super Bowl before I pass on. Well, he ain't helping himself. He's not helping himself in what he's doing right now. He has got coaching issues and also now personnel issues. And in the offseason, what do you do with Micah Parsons?
And if you think people here are upset about this coaching search.
Do talk show in Dallas.
Dallas, one of my best friends is a huge Cowboys fan. And he is as beside himself as I've ever seen with the Cowboys organization with their coaching search. That was a quote-unquote coaching search. Just promoting in-house Brian Schottenheimer to be the next head coach. And look, Schottenheimer at his introductory press conference said the right things. And, you know, but still, no Cowboys fan is happy with that hire. Real quick, Mike, Josina Anderson, to what you were saying earlier about McCarthy, I put this out, National NFL reporter. A league source tells me some of the questions surrounding Mike McCarthy and the Saints head coaching vacancy ever since he became a free agent have involved sentiments over the power structure and communication when it comes to football decisions, length of contract, etc., similar to the situation in Dallas. Exactly what you just said. Obviously, McCarthy is very tenured and accomplished. It's not hard to surmise where he'd likely expect his due respect. Everything has its own weight and impact on talks, adding that note for context towards what eventually happens in New Orleans. And then she goes on to add, additionally, a lot of league perspectives have been given as to what Gail Benson should do when it comes to the operations in her building in the future. I'll leave it at that for now. So, you know, I sent that tweet to you this morning, Mike.
My thing is, explain to me what the hell Josina just told me.
She said a lot of nothing for the most part.
But that's what I gathered,
I think what kind of the buzz early on about McCarthy, and, you know, he was the favorite. He still is the betting favorite to be the Saints' next head coach. But maybe there's kind of some talks about contract length if he were to sign in New Orleans and what kind of disagreements there may be with, you know, deciding personnel and stuff like that. Because when McCarthy was with Dallas, let's not forget, Dallas had some really good drafts and some really solid draft picks that hit. You just mentioned Micah Parsons, CeeDee Lamb, you know, some of these guys that are all pro level talents that they've hit on in the draft. I think McCarthy had something to do with kind of the draft analysis that they had with the Cowboys. And you don't think so?
No. Jerry, one of the things I've heard him talk about was when after the season was over with, he would always tell that director of player personnel, college-wise, give me your top 100 now.
Right.
Not after the bowl games, not after the Senior Bowl, not after the combine. That's what we're going to go after. And unless a player has an injury situation or a medical condition, I'm not changing it. Jerry had final say on every draft pick. Now, every once in a while, Stephen Jones. When Stephen was a player at Arkansas, that was an assistant coach there, assistant strength conditioning coach there by the name of Ed Ogeron.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, and so Coach O could tell that story one day when we get him on about exactly how they kind of met up a little bit. But Stephen was the one to convince him, do not pick Johnny Manziel, because he wanted that. He wanted that name on the marquee. Pick Zach Martin. That worked out really well because that's where their board said, Zach Martin.
Best player available.
But in essence, Jerry Jones wanted name on the marquee and Johnny Manziel.
So it's the Jones family that decides all that draft stuff. So
basically, you're right.
That's intriguing because, I don't know, I kind of figured McCarthy had a little bit of something to do with it. So
you look in the draft room.
What kind of power is he looking for then?
Well, I think he would want some say on veteran free agents that he knows a lot about. And I know Coach Payton would always talk about this, that, you know, you would always say, Mike, I know the top 100 really well. Then after that, I got to rely on my scouts.
Yeah.
And so you get it. I think most coaches are like him. They know who the top three-round players are. After that, then it gets a little dicey. And so I think he would want at least some say And he deserves that if you're the head coach. You deserve at least some of that say. Now, again, Mickey Loomis has always said he has the final say. But Mickey worked with Sean Payton. I mean, you know, and Sean, man, he banged the drum pretty hard for some players, too, that they didn't get that he really wanted. And some of them turned out, some of them didn't. But I think that would be the thing with Mike McCarthy. It won't be all this nonsense about assistant coaches. Keeping assistant coaches.
It's about personnel.
And most of them are gone.
It's about player and personnel. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all about, I think, the biggest weakness on this football team. Personnel.
Yeah.
Veteran. And also getting it through the NFL draft. We'll be back and we'll have on with us Scott Sidwell, the deputy AD, COO at Colorado State. And he'll be talking about the new ESPN documentary on Buddy Tevens, The Buddy Way, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTay along with Charlie Long in studio. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, the Deputy AD and COO at Colorado State, Scott Sidwell. Scott, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Now, I gotta ask you, Mike, I need someone to send me a king cake, man. I hear all those Mardi Gras commercials and stuff, and I'm here in Colorado, so I'm going to see if I can solicit someone to send me a couple king cakes,
Scott,
to get me through.
Okay, Scott, I'm going to take care of that. I'll let Charlie get – he's going to get your address. I'll take care of that for you.
We'll figure it out.
No. I mean that don't hang up. Charlie will get you set up, and I'll make sure you get one. Scott, two things happened at Manning Passing Academy every year for so long. One was you'd bring your dad, and your first thing Steve would always tell me is, Mike, you're taking care of the cannon? And I was like, Coach, I'm doing the best I can. And then he'd roar laughing about it. He said, I get you. And the second thing was meeting up with Buddy Tevens. And, you know, Buddy was such a great guy. I got to know him when he was the head coach here with the Green Wave. And then he ran the Manning Passing Academy all those years. And then, you know, tragically passed away the way it happened for him last year. And they'll have the new ESPN documentary on Buddy, The Buddy Way, tomorrow. It is the first time it gets shown on television, ESPN2 at 5 p.m. But you got to see the premiere of it, so I'll ask you right off the bat your thoughts about Buddy and your connection with him, and also about the film itself. It's an Omaha Productions film. It's a Manning film, right?
Yes, it is. Let me first say that, you know, it's been an honor and a pleasure in my journey here in life to cross, you know, Buddy Tevens and his family. The guy was an unbelievable person, touched so many people. And I think what you're going to, you know, really like about, you know, the documentary that was put together by Omaha Productions, which is run by, you know, Peyton Manning and the family there, is that they really told the story about the impact that he had on the game of football. And I think it's really, really fascinating to some of the things that he did around player safety, provided opportunities for women as coaches. Really, really was his focus, was who he was, right? I mean, he was a person that cared about the people around him deeply. And so he was going to adjust and adapt things to make sure that, you know, what he was in charge of took care of them first. And I don't think there's any bigger compliment that you can have in life, and certainly in the coaching profession, than to have those players that played for you say, that guy cared about me. And I think that was, you know, my biggest takeaway was his impact on the game, his impact on the people of the game, the family of football, and all these years that he was down there, you know, running Manning camp and all the people associated with it. I can summarize it by saying it was just a real honor and pleasure in my life to have known him and see his legacy live on.
One of the things with Buddy, you know, he wasn't with your typical head coach of our time frame. You would think his demeanor, because he was always, you know, sort of a laid-back guy. He would talk to you just like you and I were talking. It wasn't this holler, scream sort of situation. He was a guy that felt that if I can talk to you, I can communicate with you. I don't have to show my anger out on the field if you messed up. I can talk to you about a mistake. I think sometimes you know, you've been in this business a long time, and understanding, you know, how your dad coached, it's different today. The communication level is totally different with, you know, the 18, 23-year-old young men than it was, say, even 10 years ago. But Buddy, he was always his own guy. I mean, he was not one of these guys that was going to kind of put on a little bit of a show to act a certain way. He wasn't. He didn't have that type of personality, and he wasn't trying to fake the funk, so to speak.
Well, it was never about him, right? It was always about the people around him, and that really came out in this documentary. And I give, you know, Peyton and the people at Omaha Productions and really the Manning family a tremendous amount of credit for telling this story. And I know the people of New Orleans and his time there, you know, they ran out of time. They didn't win enough games, all those things. And he moved on to different places, but he left an impact and continued to give back to that impact, because it was never about Buddy. It was always about somebody else. And I'll say this about coaches in general, and I'm, you know, blessed and fortunate to grow up the son of a coach, and then have been blessed and fortunate to have a career in this industry to where I, you know, work with coaches directly and coach myself for a couple of years at Tulane. But the best coaches in every level are also the best teachers. And when you think about teaching people, it's more than just teaching them where they need to be on the field. It's teaching them about life. And it's teaching them about what they need to do to be successful. And that's where his legacy really shined through.
Scott, one of the things you think about people, because, you know, in this business, you're going to get criticized. As a coach, no matter what you do, you're going to get criticized. But I never heard anybody say a mean thing about Buddy. Yeah, he was one of those guys that if you knew him, you respected him. But I can't remember one person telling me anything negative about Buddy Tevens as a person?
Oh, to me, it's the ultimate legacy, right? I mean, at the honor and blessing to be around him and be someone that was on his journey, and he was, you know, he was on mine, and our family and all the people, you know, associated with him will say the same thing. At the end of the day, the most important compliment that any of us can have is when you're gone, someone says, that guy was a great guy. And you just said it, Mike. I mean, I can't think of any greater compliment in life. They're going to forget about your records. They're going to forget about how many trophies, rings, how much money you made, all those things. Your legacy is really about what people think about you, and Buddy Tevens personified that in the highest levels.
I remember one year he brought this mechanical deal that would be almost like you chasing the quarterback. You know, it was on wheels. And so,
yes, they had, MVP. Yes.
Yeah. So they had all these college quarterbacks, and they were up. And I'll never forget Josh Allen. Okay. He was at Wyoming his last year there. And he took a look and he turned around. I'm just so happened to be standing right behind him. He was like, man, what the hell is that? And I'm like, man, okay, you built like a lumberjack. You shouldn't be scared of that. But it was just the way it kind of came at you. And mechanically, it kind of imitated what you would feel like to have a little bit of pressure, because when you go to Manning, there's no pass rush on you. You basically thrown against right. air. And I think that was such a great innovation to give you that little bit of, okay, that guy's right there in front of me, and that's how I got to throw the football. But some of even the college quarterback counselors, they had to get used to it also.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, I mentioned it earlier, but he really revolutionized the game with that type of ingenuity and innovation. And I'll get just a preview of what you're going to see. But I mean, really, it came about at a time that, you know, Buddy had come off of a few, you know, losing seasons and some different things in his second stint at Dartmouth. And he was just tired of seeing, you know, the players with concussions and those types of things. And he said, you know, I've got to do something about this. And so, you know, you'll see it in the Buddy way. And it's just, it's a fascinating story. I think it's one of these, you know, documentaries that's going to live on for a long, long time, because it's bigger than just, you know, about the X's and O's and what he did. It's about who he was and what he did for the game of football. And I'll say even further, it's one of the great things that I think people love about the Manning family is that they truly are the caretakers of the game. And so, you know, the things that they do at Manning Passing Academy, how they go about their business with, you know, Eli and Peyton walking through with special guests talking about the game, how Archie has always conducted himself, you know, at the highest levels of respect, and but they love the game. And Buddy was that type of person in their family and my family and others, that when you truly love the game of football, you do things to try to preserve it and enhance it along the way, and Buddy did that.
Scott, last question for you. I know you've been involved in coaching searches, and years and years ago, I talked to Sam Jankovich. At that time, he was the athletic director of Miami of Florida, and he had went through Howard Schnellenberger, Jimmy Johnson, Dennis Erickson, and then Butch Davis. And his deal was, out of all those guys, only one was my top choice. You always have to have a list as far as guys that you think might be interested in the job, and some might, but then, you know, they think about it, I'm going to stay where I'm at. And sometimes it's financial. Sometimes it's about some matter of control here and there. But in the position that you've been in, that a coaching search, you better have a list of more than one, is all I can tell you. And listening to Jankovich tell me, hey, listen, the only guy that was number one on my list when I hired him, only because he coached me, it was Dennis Erickson, because Sam had coached him in high school. And so he was like, he was a natural for me to hire. He said the other guys weren't. And he said, for one of them, they were like the fourth guy on my list. So he said, you know, a lot of times fans think, oh, it's one guy or two guys. From your standpoint, having been involved with it, that is also a matter of getting to know as many as you can on your list, and because you know some of them aren't going to have an interest in it.
Well, listen, it's first of all, it's not a perfect science, or else it would be easy to quantify and use analytics and do all that. And that's all part of it now, more so than ever. I think the biggest thing, you know, with how you go about that is you've got to find the person that fits your organization, who you are, what's your resources, how you go about it, where you are in the region. All of those things are factors in who you hire. And so it's not just because they could do a great job 3,000 miles away at a place that's drastically different than where you are. It's got to fit who you are, both as an institution, as well as, you know, where you stand as a pro organization at every level, really. I mean, whether you're hiring for a high school coach, a college coach, or pro coaches, it really has to, what's important to the organization that's hiring, and how does this person fit, and what type of track record do they have that gives you confidence that they can do it where you're at.
Scott, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. Man, always a pleasure talking to you. Hang on, Charlie will get you your address. I'll get you that king cake. But again, man, a great job describing the documentary, and it'll come out tomorrow on ESPN2 at 5 p.m. the first time it'll air, The Buddy Way on Buddy Tevens. Thanks so much, Scott. Appreciate it, bud.
Yeah, thank you. It's a great watch. I encourage it highly for everybody to tune in, because it is really a special, special documentary. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Scott. Scott Sidwell, Deputy AD and COO at Colorado State. When we come back, we'll have on with us our Saints sideline reporter and WWL sports digital content producer Jeff Nowak, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTay along with Charlie Long in studio. We'll go to our Oakland Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line. It'll be our Saints sideline reporter, and also he's WWL's digital content producer, Jeff Nowak. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us out at the Senior Bowl. Covering practices there. Jeff, before we get into Senior Bowl talk, a little bit about update from what you've been hearing out in Mobile about the Saints coaching search.
You know, nothing major. It was reported that Cliff Kingsbury is not interested in interviewing for any head coaching jobs, and there's only one left, so that means he's not interested in interviewing for the Saints head coaching job. And on its face, it shouldn't be surprising, as you kind of mold it into this, hey, Aaron Glenn didn't take an interview, Joe Brady didn't take an interview, now Cliff's not taking an interview. it starts to paint a picture of, okay, this is not a very attractive job. But otherwise, you're kind of just in a holding pattern. Saints interviewed Kellen Moore last night, late into the morning. We'll see how that goes. We'll see if Mike McCarthy schedules an interview at this point. There's nothing scheduled as far as I know. We did get to talk to Mike Kafka today. He's the head one of the head coaches at the Senior Bowl. He says, as far as he knows, he's still in the mix. So I think we're getting down the home stretch here.
Yep,
but I don't think there's anything imminent right now.
I got you. And also, too, is next week, the NFL frowns. Hey, none of this announcing. Hey, we want that spotlight. Excuse me, on us. None of this coaching search. You do it in that announcement after the Super Bowl. Jeff, you and I were talking this morning a little bit about some of the players there. And one of the guys I wrote you a little bit of a write-up on was Xavier Restrepo. And Xavier, man, Coach O's son actually coached him at Miami of Florida. And he was helping the receivers there. And during the summer, he was like, whoa, you ought to see this guy. And to watch him run a route, and he reminded me right off the bat of McConkie. Watching what he did at Georgia, this was before he went with the Chargers. He's a little bit thicker build guy. Your comparison was Amon-Ra St. Brown. But, man, he had a day because you could watch the corners bailing out on him. They were so scared that he was going to beat them with a deeper move. Man, he was working that inside route. That's exactly what he did for the Hurricanes. He'd work that inside route, and then all of a sudden he beat you deep downfield. Xavier had a really good opening day.
Yeah, and another guy I saw him compared to was Wandale Robinson. I think he's a little bigger and not as quick as Wandale, but a lot of the same skills. And what I see when I watch him is just a guy who's always balanced. He's never out over his skis. He's always able to cut in any direction. And that's a skill that, you know, a guy like Chris Olave is really good at that. It's one of the reasons he's able to be open all the time. He's like 7-11, right? Never closes. Always open is what I should say. But, you know, it's really fascinating to watch in this context because you don't get to see a lot of practices, a lot of college practices. You see it happen in a game, and you throw these guys out there one-on-one, and, yeah, you can see the fear in the eyes of the defender as he's like, okay, I have no idea. You give this guy a three-way go, there's no cover in him, right? And he's just able to snap off these routes. And, you know, I'm interested to see how this develops over the week. You know, it's always tough the first day at the Senior Bowl because a lot of the receivers are going to get held back by – the quarterback's trying to figure out where they're going to be, right? Jalen Milroe had a really rough day today. Jackson Dart got off to a slow start. But, you know, it's tough to gauge. Like, oh, okay, if he throws this three more times, is it going to be a completion versus right now where it's a little just the timing is off? But now Xavier, you know, it does not take long watching him to understand why he's going to be a very coveted player on draft day.
One of the things Parker brought out to me was like, man, we sort of didn't want the freshman going up against him all the time because, man, he steal your confidence real quickly. So Parker was, we had a lot of the veteran guys and was like, hey, man, watch what he does. And he is a great setup guy. And the thing that's so impressive with Xavier is the fact that he gets out of the cut and a break without losing any speed. Now, a lot of times you got fast guys. They almost come to a complete stop before they make that cut and that break. Watch Xavier. He doesn't lose anything in transition. That's what, to me, is so impressive and sort of reminds me a little bit of McConkie because he's like that. Now, he don't have a big, tall body because he's, I think, 5'9", is probably what he kind of measured in at. But if you're a 6'3" receiver and you got those long legs, it's a little bit different in transition to try to break down and get into that cut and break without losing any speed. So, man, he's a guy that I think a lot of scouts are really going to like once they focus in. One of the guys I watched this morning, and he played guard, he played tackle, and he even got work at center. And that was Gray Zabel from North Dakota State. And it reminded me so much of watching Cody Mock a few years back. Cody had played tackle. He worked at guard at the Senior Bowl, where he ended up being a second-round pick of the Bucs. They also kicked him in. I think he took a couple snaps at center. He didn't snap it as much as what I watched Greatest Morning, but, man, you're talking about a 6 foot five and a half guy, about 315 pounds. The versatility of him really stood out, and he looked like a natural. It didn't matter what position he played of how he could handle, and I think most people are looking at him as an interior player, either a guard or center, how well he sort of adjusted it. Man, Ricky Jackson used to say this all the time. Man, if you're scared, say you're scared. Man, he wasn't scared going up against guys because he don't play that type of athlete each and every week. Not where he was playing at, but he wasn't intimidated at all about playing a different level of competition.
No, and that's always going to be a question with those, you know, the North Dakota State guys, the guys who are kind of coming up a level and now competing with all the, you know, all these Big Ten schools. And, you know, you wonder, okay, is he going to be kind of outclassed out there? It was the same question you had when you went and you watched Trevor Penning play at the Senior Bowl. And, you know, I wouldn't say that he got outclassed there, but the technical elements of it were a little away from him. And we saw him struggle with that earlier in his career. I didn't see a guy in gray that was outmatched. Right? Like he was in there, he was holding up these. It is kind of, you know, we talked to Jari Evans today and he works with the other team. So he wasn't working with Gray, but one thing he talked about is like, this is the first time these guys have had pads on in a while, right? This is the first time they've had these kind of personal drills where you're just one-on-one. And yeah, you see a little feistiness like creep in because you know, no one wants to get embarrassed out there, but at the same time, it's like, all right, let's not kill each other. But no, I thought Gray looked well. I thought Josh Connerly had a solid day.
Yes,
got to talk to him after the day. And, you know, I asked him, hey, what are you working on? What do you want to show people? He's like, I want to show people the best tackle in the draft. And, you know, Will Campbell might have something to say about that, but, you know, I like the confidence. I think he's just I would describe him as a mean guy. And I don't intend that as a negative. I think when you're watching guys in those drills, you want the mean guy. You want the guy who's playing to the echo of the whistle, and that's what I saw with him. You know, one thing they do, not to change the subject, but one thing they do at the end of the Senior Bowl practices is they have, like, kind of these one-on-one sets where the team that wins, you know, the losing team has to do 25 push-ups, and it was Connerly who went out there in that set, and he just drilled a guy into the turf, and I just think that's the type of personality he's got. And so I'm looking forward to watching kind of these competitions between offense and defense over the course of these next 3 days, because you know, you line up against the same guy 3 days in a row, he beats you one day, you want to get back at him the next day. So it's going to be interesting to see how those matchups develop.
Connerly has a target almost like what Fuaga did, that you thought he'd be a first round pick, but more maybe like a teens, early 20s. I think he moves up. He'll be a top 15 pick before it's all over with. Man, he's talented. He can move his feet. He's an experienced pass blocker, but it's his hand placement skills and his footwork. He's so good at it. And he got a mean streak. Not a little one. He got a long one. Man, he don't like nobody when he's out on the field. The other guy who plays like that too, and you and I were texting him, is Landon Jackson from Texas kid, goes to LSU. He came in, his second number was a 3, okay? He was 230-something. You know, he wasn't 240 pounds. And now he's picked up some weight. He's in the 270s. Long-arm kid. He's gotten a little taller, just the way his size was listed. But he reminds me a lot of a bigger version of Trey Hendrickson. He makes plays with hustle and desire. And you watch when Arkansas played, teams were chipping him. He wasn't one-on-one. Somebody else was trying to block Landon, and he came in here, and he was this wide-eyed kid from Texas. And, man, Coach O, being a defensive line coach, he was on his rear from one end to the other. But he had told me, hey, he can take it. He got a thick hide, and he knows how to play. He ended up, after Coach O left, he ended up at Arkansas. But, man, he's a guy that you could also see some elevation in his draft stock. I think he's a second-round pick. But if you're looking for a pass rusher in a certain defense, man, Landon's a really good prospect.
Yeah, no, he's impressive. He's a bull, right? And you can see him out there lining up against these, you know, these tackles, and he's dwarfing them. You know, what I'm concerned about with him a little bit is he plays a little more upright than I want to see. I need to see a little bit more bend from him. I think that's what he's going to have to show people in this draft process, is that he can actually get around the edge. Because when you have these really big tackles and DNs, they can get in trouble sometimes. They get kind of lifted off their feet. So that's what I want to see out of him. But no, he's an impressive prospect for sure.
And you think about it, one time, Savion Jones was there. They had Landon there. And another kid who's there, and he weighed out more at Louisiana line camp than he did at the Senior Bowl. That's Cameron Jackson, who ended up at Memphis. He was a commit to LSU, and he had maybe a grade issue or two, and he ended up at Memphis, and then he ends up finishing up at Florida. I think he weighed in like 338, 339.
Six, what? And a half. 339.
Okay.
He's a big boy.
I know one thing. When he came to Louisiana line camp, that second number was a six, and he was three in the front of it, so he was a big guy. Jeff, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Take care, and thanks for all the information.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Yeah, have a good one.
All righty. That was Jeff Nowak, our Saints sideline reporter, WWL digital content producer at Mobile at the Senior Bowl, giving us updates daily. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number one of Sports Talk right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, I want to thank Scott Sidwell, Deputy AD COO at Colorado State, previewing the Buddy Tevens ESPN documentary that'll play tomorrow, 5 p.m., on ESPN, the Buddy Way, and also Jeff Nowak covering the Senior Bowl for us here on the Big 870. Jimmy, hold on. When we come back, we'll take you. And then after that, Mark Schlereff will join us talking NFL, Saints, and also Super Bowl right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.